Dear listener, if you like this podcast, I want to tell you about something else you might enjoy as well. Every week, I host an online meetup. In each meeting, I give a presentation on some programming topic, or I bring a guest to the group for a discussion, or I do a code review on a member's code base, or I do some kind of consultation with one of our members. Coming to this meetup is kind of like listening to this podcast, except it's live and interactive, which means you get a chance to ask questions and participate in a conversation with other programmers like yourself. The meetup is also a fun place to meet some new friends. To learn more and to sign up, visit codewithjason.com/meetup. Now on to the episode. Hey, today I'm here with Jim Remzik. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. You came to me because, well, I think you kind of came to me multiple ways. So for one, I met Jack, who works at Flagrant, your agency, in Romania back in September. It's December 2023 as we record this. And he asked me if I knew you. And I said no because the name didn't ring a bell, but I kind of did. I did know you a little bit because we actually had dinner together back in, I think, 2021 in Denver at a Vietnamese restaurant because we were there for RubyConf. Fun fact, Jim, I recorded an entire episode about the bowl of soup that I ate that night at that Vietnamese restaurant.
What?
Yeah, so that was like a momentous... It was a milestone in my life, which you were a part of. So there was that. And then also one of my consulting clients, he brought up your name. I think I was planning to visit Madison. I actually still am planning to visit Madison to visit my client who lives there. And mm-hmm. he mentioned you. And so that was the second time your name came up. And then, of course, turns out we were already acquainted from before. Anyway, yeah, that's kind of the backstory. Yeah, you were going to say something?
Yeah, that Vietnamese restaurant, you know, was it came highly recommended, and we decided to make that trip and showed up, and it was just a Vietnamese restaurant in a strip mall, but it was fantastic.
It truly was.
Yeah. So definitely I remember that dinner, and you were all the way on the other side, so we didn't get to talk.
But. Yeah. Well, we're getting to talk now.
That's true.
So tell me a little bit about... Well, I want to hear your entire story, but maybe we can just start with what's Flagrant?
Yeah, so Flagrant is my latest, I guess, consultancy. Started in January of 2020. And, you know, just pre-pandemic, we didn't see that coming, but I had... previously had a consultancy and sold it and wanted to get back to it. I really like small shops, and finally got an opportunity. I picked up a client in January of 2020 and was able to build a team who worked with for 2 years, worked on that client for 2 years, and we've kept going, and we're about 16 people today, and we expect to be around 20 by the beginning of next year. We do not just development, but a lot of design and sort of product. So full stack, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And I have a question for you. A little bit of context about the question first. I've been freelance on and off since like 2011. And recently I went out on my own like about a month ago. And I don't use the word freelancer to refer to myself now. I say that I'm a consultant because freelancing implies like coding by the hour. And even consultant does to a lot of people too. It's kind of an overloaded term. But presently I'm doing like coaching and stuff like that. And there's certain reasons why I'm interested in that kind of career, but I'm curious for you. You've done this kind of thing for many years. What interests you in this kind of career as opposed to just a regular job?
Yeah, I think the one of the things that interests me is just the variety. I could go to a product shop and work with a product and work on a product for a long time. I like the variety and being able to solve different problems. Although the fact of the matter is I've been working on the business side for quite a while. And so that tends to be where a lot of my expertise is lately. And so, you know, it's kind of a self-perpetuating cycle. I do make sure and keep my skills sharp. It's just I have to work that time in here and there. And then, you know, ultimately, I really do enjoy helping people. And so I think that's what keeps me in this space in particular.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's definitely overlap between my interests and your interests. For me, you know, I was talking to this guy the other day who for many years has done training and consulting and such. And I asked him a similar question, like, why this instead of a job? And he was like, well, I'm psychologically unsuited for a job. And I was like, yeah, that's a good way to put it. Like, me too. And I've had a lot of different jobs. And quite frankly, I like haven't fit in at many organizations. And I've been, well, I put it this way. I have kind of a low bullshit tolerance, lower than most people, I think. And so when we're like doing a project and we're just doing things in such a dumb way or whatever it may be, I just have a hard time with that. And so I'm not really cut out for that world. But, you know, I like to think I'm a pretty smart guy. And when left to my own devices and I'm not encumbered by bureaucracy and all this other stuff, I can do good work. And so I want to help other people do good work and achieve the level of, oh, not to put it in too grandiose of a way, but achieve the level of excellence that they're capable of.
Yeah, I think that we came at it from different places. Like, I think I was an excellent employee. And, you know, I don't know, I'm a guy that likes to be helpful. And so I'd wear a lot of hats and whatnot. But the fact of the matter is, once you see a business like, well, just about any business run for any length of time, you realize that they're not always making the smartest decisions all the time. And yes, there are reasons why they might not be able to do the latest, greatest thing or constantly shift to a new shiny. That's not what I'm talking about. It's just being the most efficient with their decision making and not settling for less. And I think that is another reason why I struggled to today go out and just get a job. Because once you've had the freedom and the ability to make the decisions, yeah, there can be a lot of, you know, there can be a lot built into those decisions, and it's not always easy, but to be able to have that autonomy and be able to just say this is actually how we're going to do it and deal with the results is very freeing. And it's been hard for me to try to go back.
So something that aspiring freelancers, consultants, whatever, ask me sometimes is just for advice on how to get started and stuff like that. And something that I always emphasize to people is that probably the most important thing in being self-employed is sales and marketing, getting clients. Because if you can get good clients, then all the other stuff is figure-outable, like taxes and business cards and all that stuff. All the things that like freelancing books normally mainly cover, like that stuff is, it's not necessarily that it's easy, but there's not a lot of mystery there. Like the information is easy to find. Whereas with getting clients, like that's the hard part, but it's the most important part. And obviously you have been successful at that, because if you hadn't been, then you wouldn't have been able to do this for so many years. the answer to this question could fill, you know, hours and hours and days of talking about it, but how have you managed to get clients?
Yeah. So, when I was leaving my first Ruby job, me and a coworker were, presenting a talk, that we submitted to 6 different conferences and got accepted to all of them. And when we went and gave that talk, one of the questions that he would ask everybody who ran consultancies or who sold work is, where do you find your work? And to a person, it was always word of mouth. And word of mouth is a great answer, and it's a terrible answer because it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
Yeah, and it's frustrating because it's like, oh, okay, I'll just go get some word of mouth.
Yeah, exactly. What does word of mouth mean? And I had somebody who, when I was getting started, shared this, and this is a thing that I share with all of my pretty much anybody that I talk to when I'm giving advice about careers is, it's not what you know, it's not who you know, it's who knows you. And it's so important for people to understand that when people are looking to have a problem solved, do they think of you? Do they think of you as a person who can solve that problem for them, or that knows that somebody is out there? Do you know somebody that's out there that can solve a problem for them? Like, getting into that conversation is a big part of, I think, how we've been able to, how I've been able to sustain sales for so long. And, you know, word of mouth also means going and speaking at conferences, going and attending conferences. I don't do enough blogging. I'm not on enough podcasts, but those are other examples of, you know, you think about anybody that you know in the community, how do you know them? Like, if they're not local, how do you know who they are, and how do you know what problem they could solve for you if you had their time? And so I think that's really is what it has come down to for me, is just trying to be in people's minds, and you know, when they have a problem, hopefully they'll reach out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think of it as kind of a menu of options. So I divide the sales and marketing activities into 2 categories that I call hunting and farming. And hunting is like maybe going to a meetup with the intention of finding somebody who can be a client of yours in the relative short term. That's one example. And then farming could be things like going on podcasts or hosting a podcast, writing blog posts, doing a YouTube channel, hosting a meetup, all that kind of stuff. There's definitely more stuff too. And I think a person has to like take stock of what they're suited for and what they enjoy and stuff like that. I for myself chose most of those. On that list, I think I do all those things and more. And with hunting and farming, it's like hunting only works a small percentage of the time, but when it works relatively instantly. And then farming takes a longer time to work, but the yield tends to be higher quality.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So in, oh gosh, was it 2014, maybe, I did a talk at Ruby on Rails, because I, especially at Twitter's peak, like I could go into most cities and throw up a signal flare and wind up having, you know, a meal or coffee or, you know, some connection with somebody. And, you know, if not, grabbing an extra room in their house or whatever. And people would say, how do you do that? And so I wrote a talk for Ruby on Rails, that the gist of that talk came down to a personal mission statement that I reverse engineered for myself. And, that was genuinely desire success in those around you and do what you can to make it happen. And there's a lot wrapped up in that, but you have to, for me, the reason that I think that it works is that I genuinely care whether or not the people around me are successful. And that includes not just like potential partners or somebody who's got something that I want, but it is like the barista, the janitor, like literally everybody. The, you know, you go to a conference and there's somebody hanging out at a table by themselves. Like that person in 2 or 3 years could be somebody that is important to your success. And so, yeah, it's ever since I did that talk, it's really helped me couch why I do some of the things that I do. And it's not just to get a result. Like it's, I want them to be successful, and then a rising tide lifts all ships. Right. And so, if you're surrounded by successful people, you know, if you do need something, you're more likely to be bailed out.
Yeah. It's like the best way to be selfish and get what you want is to behave in a way that's completely consistent with absolute selflessness.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I've kind of adopted that mindset for myself. I always try to help people because I believe that that stuff comes back around somehow, and you can never predict what it's going to be. And so I really try not to filter people and only help people who seem like they're going to be worthwhile, whatever that might mean. Because exactly what you mentioned, you know, I remember there was this one time I was talking to some guy. He was a lot younger than me, and I kind of dismissed him. And then it turned out that he was like, not that this like matters, but like he was like this, he was the son of like this really prominent, rich family. And he was like, you know, I thought he was like just some loser, but he was like totally not. And again, like the point isn't to try to get things out of people or something like that. But it's like dangerous to make those assumptions about people. And so that was a really instructive lesson for me to like, don't filter people, just be helpful to everybody.
Yeah. And it's not hard, but, it doesn't come natural, to everybody either. And so it's, you have to, move with intent.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So out of these things that I mentioned, like we were talking about blogging and you mentioned how you don't blog much anymore. What kind of things do you do these days to stay out there? We were talking about the conference pre-show. That's one of them, I suppose.
Yeah. So we're excited to let people know that, Madison Ruby is coming back after a 5-year hiatus. So that'll be August 1st and 2nd of 2024. Like that, I think, was very successful in its time. That's an interesting situation too, because I think a lot of people associate it with the company that I worked with at the time, which was BendyWorks. And, you know, it was mostly something that my wife and I were doing on the side. But there's just so many connections that we made throughout there. And, you know, talk about word of mouth. Even though I might not know everybody who had a ticket and was in the theater, like what if you're emceeing the conference, you're there and you've got all eyes on you. Like people have a sense of connection with you. And so that is it's not why we're bringing it back. It's like the reason that we're bringing it back is to help people. Like I really do believe, especially after going to RubyConf in San Diego, that there's a ton of really, really talented people trying to enter the community. And there's just not that many great options for them. Like the folks that were able to attend San Diego, you know, have a step up. You know, there's a lot of really great people there, but I think a thing that we've lost is those regional conferences. Like there are employers, you know, in the Southern Wisconsin area where I live, Northern Illinois, Minnesota, that would come to Madison Ruby, and people would walk away with really great connections. Those folks aren't necessarily going to San Diego to attend RubyConf. And so likewise, you might not, as a an early career or a career changer, you might not be able to afford to go to San Diego, but you might be able to you know, drive 3 hours and crash on somebody's couch and get access to a community, a collection of jobs and job opportunities. And like, that's why I'm excited to bring Madison Ruby back, is connecting folks with opportunities. You know, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword. I think we did have a lot of people in the Madison area who got connected to opportunity and wound up leaving, like going to live in Austin or San Francisco or wherever. But you know, it's better for us all to have those people be successful than to have them around and not be successful.
Yeah. Yeah. And 2024 is an absolute bonanza for residents of the Midwest, because we got Rails World in Toronto, RailsConf in Detroit, RubyConf in Chicago, and now Madison Ruby. For me personally, all these are driving distance. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, it's maybe oversampled this year, but they each do bring their own thing as well. And so I don't think you have to go to all of them, but I think you should probably come to Madison Ruby.
Yeah, I'm really excited for it. I'm planning to go to it because I like these smaller conferences like you were talking about, because I think ironically at the smaller conferences, my experience is that you tend to make more connections than at the bigger conferences, because you can spend like more quality time with the people you meet instead of it just being kind of a revolving door.
Well, and you met Jack, who is a biz dev specialist with us. Like, why did we sponsor Friendly RB in Romania? Like, why did we send a person to Romania? Like, this is a little bit of a conference hack. Like, when you go overseas, it limits, you know, the people that are traveling, for one. So you're not likely to see a ton of Americans there. And then the folks that do go over there, tend to be, you know, have opportunities or have, you know, connections or whatnot. And so, and then just this has happened to me a number of times. When I would go over, I would wind up hanging out with the other American folks. And so whether it's Patrick McKenzie in Finland or Jim Wyrick in Scotland, like it gave me access to folks that I didn't have back here. And so the same is true with regionals. Like, we try and bring in some folks that, that will be a draw, that people know, but we also like put them in a room with 100 other people. Like, it's easier to approach them than if you're at a conference with 400 or 500 people.
Yeah. Yeah. And something that I'm planning to do at my conference, Sin City Ruby, that happens this coming March, is have kind of this forced socialization period where I get people together in little groups and have conversation prompts and stuff like that, because not everybody has the gumption to just like walk up to a stranger and initiate a conversation, which I can totally understand. And so hopefully I can help grease the wheels with some of those interactions.
Yeah, I've seen a number of attempts at those things, you know, of varying degrees of success. We've brought in an improv trainer, Jesse Sternschuss, in the past, and she typically would bring in some kind of activity and just get you to get to know the people around you. And then, you know, every time you see those people throughout the rest of the conference, you have a connection with them. And so you're able to feel like, at least I know that one person that I met in the opener. I remember Marty Haught at Rocky Mountain Ruby a while back created a card game, and you had to trade with other members of the conference and get the best deck, and the best deck or best hand rather, the best hand was, you know, to be determined by, you know, whoever was willing to come up on stage and say that they had the best card and or best cards. So seen a lot of different ways of trying to make those connections happen in people. And I'm happy for it. I think it is I think that in general, our community is pretty open as long as somebody's willing to take the first step.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, do you have any idea what the attendance size at Madison Ruby will be?
We're looking to sell 200 tickets.
Mm-hmm.
If we're able to get close to that, we will be able to do, I've been calling it a scholarship, but I'm not sure it's actually a scholarship program. We're going to be able to bring in some folks that wouldn't otherwise be able to afford to come.
Nice.
Yeah.
And to kind of change topics a little bit, you mentioned at the beginning of the show about being a full stack agency, and I talked with Andrew, I believe it was, about design, and I talked with Jack too about design in Romania. And something that I've found, because my technical specialty is testing, but everything is connected to everything else, and you can't really practice sound testing in isolation. There are things upstream that are going to influence how successfully or not you can practice testing. Because tests are executable specifications, which means that you have to have those specifications. And in theory, you can come up with those specifications on the fly and think of what you want as you're testing, but that's not always all that efficient. It's not always going to give you coherent results and stuff like that. And so I'm a big fan of a certain amount of design up front. Like, we've been taught no big design up front. And it's like, yes, correct. But no big design up front doesn't mean no design up front whatsoever. And so I'm curious to hear how you think about that design portion of the development lifecycle.
Yeah, I think it's actually an ongoing conversation inside of Flagrant. We have spent a fair amount of time and effort going through design research methodologies and to really spend the time to understand what our prospective users or our clients' prospective users need out of a piece of software. And so there's been a fair amount of, the same sort of exercises that we typically do as developers, wireframing, mockups, and et cetera. But then I think before we write code, testing those mockups, and it's not perfect, but I think it has helped us to really understand the needs of our clients a lot better than we would have otherwise. We have one client who said he's been in the space that he is in for 20 years, and the solution that we came up for how to display pricing is very complicated. He said it is so elegant, I've never seen anybody in 20 years break it down that way.
Nice.
And that is because we spent a lot of time talking to users and then thinking about how are we going to solve this this problem of a very complex UI in a way that feels simple.
When I was talking to Jack when we first met, it was such a breath of fresh air, because this stuff to me now it kind of seems like common sense, although none of these ideas were original to me. I got them all from somewhere else. But it's so rare for people who develop software to actually go to the trouble to understand the domain, not exactly just the domain, but like to understand the needs of the people that they're building the thing for. What makes me really sad sometimes, and it's like such a programmer move, is we have some UI and we're talking about trying to gain a better understanding, and people are like, oh, well, we have New Relic, like, let's put some telemetry on it and look at the data. And it's like, no, like, just because something is data doesn't mean that it's actually information. people talk about making data-driven decisions as if that somehow leads you to the truth all the time. And that's not exactly it. Like, sometimes a qualitative understanding beats the hell out of a quantitative, out of quantitative metrics. And so few people spend time actually talking with the people who are going to use the software.
Yeah, I think there's a really great image. Most people have probably seen this, but the planes that went and flew and in World War II dropped bombs, come back and they would be like Swiss cheese, right? And people would say, oh, these are the places that we need to reinforce because the bullets went through. It's like, no, those are the planes that came back because they got shot there. Where you need to actually reinforce is the rest of the plane. And I think that when you were talking about data, that's what came to mind, is that you can have all the data in the world, and if you misunderstand it, it's not going to be of any use. And you know, in addition to having good information, is making sure that you're talking to the right people, like getting data from the right source. There's so many times in my career where I have been sitting with a client who says, oh, we should do it this way. And like, that is one person thinking about how they think about the situation. And oftentimes they're not even their user. And so you wind up building the wrong thing, even though, you know, you both sat down and you thought about how to build this thing. Like, you didn't get input from the people that will eventually be spending time on it. And that is one of my biggest pet peeves, is when people ignore the impact that the application that they're building is going to have on other people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure you think about it in a similar way. Like, I think it's kind of a mistake a lot of the time to ask users what they want, because they may well give you a prescription for what you should give them, but they're not. Well, I'll say this: like, I think it's a lot better to gain an understanding of that person's world and the job that they need to do, and then come up with a solution, because that person. The fact that they need software in order to help them do a job is not the same thing as them having the capability to design that thing to help them do their job.
Absolutely. And I think one thing that is true is that we always frame the problem or the problem gets framed, even if it's not by us or not intentional. Here, sit down with Jason. He's going to help you solve your problem. Okay, well, what does Jason do? He writes software. Okay, we're going to solve this with software. Like, there's no, the best software is no software, right? Like, making sure that they're getting their problem solved. We had a potential customer come to us, and he had an idea for an app. And so we sat down with him and like tried to understand what he wanted. He was a magician, and he wanted to be able to develop recipes for magic tricks, and know that if he was going to do a show, he's going to do, you know, the sawing the lady in half, the rabbit out of the hat, and cutting a rope. And each of those things had a collection of things that he needed to take with him. And some of those things are disposable, and so there were costs associated with them. I think it was a pretty interesting application. I would love to build it with him someday, but he had no idea who was going to pay for it. And so we told him, you shouldn't build software yet. Like, you're not far enough along. Like, build spreadsheets, sell the spreadsheets to people, and like build a following of people who are willing to pay you money for the knowledge that you're giving them. And then let's try and figure out how we can ramp that up. And yeah, I think there's so often that we wind up sitting down and assuming we're going to solve the problem with software, and that might not even be the best path for the problem that we're presented with.
Yeah, I completely agree. And yeah, in general, the less software, the better. The fewer moving parts, the less complexity, all that stuff. Well, before we start heading toward a conclusion, let's see, we've talked about Madison Ruby. I've mentioned SimCity Ruby. Anything else you want to touch on before we go?
I think, you know, again, there's a lot of people that are interested in getting into the community, and there's you know, a wide swath of boot camps promising people, you know, jobs and high paying jobs, etc. But there really are just a ton of really talented people out there. If you have the availability to consider bringing people on for even for contract work or what have you, I think we owe it to ourselves to make sure that there's another generation in the community, and you know, trying to put our money where our mouth is. You know, we're working on bringing some folks on, and just getting them involved. That's the other thing too, is you have a platform here, Jason. Could you talk to an early career person for a portion of the show, or you know, a companion episode or something like that? And like, because a lot of them are bringing different perspectives and you know, if not other career experience. And you know, I'm really hopeful that we're able to support a good chunk of these people, that they really just want to be one of us. They want to be in the community. They want to, they want to be a part.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll say that, you know, of my, podcast listeners and email subscribers and those types of people, sometimes people reach out to me because they mentioned they're looking for a job and they just want to try to move forward somehow. And I want to say that I'm always happy to help those people. So, dear listener, if you're in that position, feel free to contact me. And I mean, I can't guarantee that I can help in any way, but I can at least have a talk with you and we can get acquainted, and maybe there's somebody I know who I can introduce you to, or something like that.
Yeah. Same for me. I routinely, have conversations like these, and actually at RubyConf, I was able to connect, somebody who I had met through a boot camp, with somebody who was local to San Diego. And, if not yet, then shortly, they're going to pick up a gig there. And we have, I think one of the surprising things to me. So again, listener, feel free to reach out. I enjoy talking with people and trying to connect them with opportunities. You know, it's again, genuinely desire success in those around you and do what you can to make it happen. We are about to hire, hopefully somebody who was a part of a boot camp that we did 8 years ago. And that sort of, path is just deeply fulfilling to me to think that we paid a little bit forward 8 years ago and it's paying us dividends today. Not why we did the boot camp. It's just kind of a cool thing to see. Yeah. So, not only, you know, I didn't mean to put Jason on the spot, and I don't mean to suggest that I'm the only one that can do this either. Like, talk to people that are in the field, like reach out to people. Lots of us are happy to try and connect you. And it, as Jason said, we might not have a job to be able to offer you, but there's likely something that we can do to some advice that we can give, or even just be an ear as you're thinking through your next move.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great place to leave it. Jim, where can people go online to learn more about Flagrant and learn about you and all that?
Yeah, I think BeFlagrant, BeFlagrant.com. I'm also on Ruby Social. It's Jay Remsick Jr. And on the Elon Hellscape at the same spot.
And Madison Ruby happens in August 2024, right?
That's correct. First and second.
Okay. And we'll put that in the show notes also. And Jim, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.